Previously.tv Podcast Network.
If this is Danny, we can't let him go public.
No. No, we cannot. Now, there are other questions to consider as well. If he's still alive, does that mean his parents are still alive? Who else knows he's alive? What does he know? Who was he told? How the hell did he learn martial arts? Why has he waited this long to show up? Now that he's here, what does he want?
And all the questions kept coming up over and over again, like bubbles in a case of club soda. Who is this character in the hospital? And why was he trying to kill Nordberg? And for whom? Did Ludwig lie to me? Why was the I Love You not listed in Ludwig's records? And if it was, did he know about it? And if he didn't, who did? And where the hell was I?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 149 for the week of March 20th, 2017. I am dirtiest whitewash David T. Cole, and I'm here with performative barefootedness Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm soulful, get it?
Yeah!
AA Landlord, Tara Ariano.
I'm the only interesting one.
And compassionate capitalist Chris Huff.
Free prescription drugs for everyone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. We are happy to have the other half of the Huff connection with us this week. It is Chris Huff. Welcome, Chris.
Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks Yay! For having me back.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you there. Sorry. this week, we are talking about the universe's fantastically highest rated show, possibly the best show ever. It is Marvel's Iron Fist from Netflix. Mm-hmm. It is getting a drubbing, and I am just going to go on a limb and say deservedly so. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but on Twitter, I described this as aggressively boring, and I stick by it. Chris Huff, you're one of our many, many swarm contributors to Iron Fist.
And not only that, but Chris is two episodes, episode 8 and 10, if I recall correctly, Chris.
You had to watch
Correct.
So many.
He has had to watch way more than we did. Dave and I watched just the one on the weekend.
Yeah, you know, usually I feel like, you know, I have a duty to sort of, you know, watch so many if I'm going to like chime in on it. Not that I'm like Mr. and Mrs. TV critic like Tara and Sarah here. You know, I'm just the stupid guy with the sound effects and
True.
Stuff. But I couldn't even make it through. That was it. I'm like, you know what, guys? You know, we all make sacrifices for our craft, but I don't want to watch any more of this show.
You guys are like swimming in the kiddie pool shallow version of boring. I am... neck deep and boring.
Yeah.
So it didn't get better is what you're saying. Chris, tell us more.
I wanted it so much to get better.
And then there'd be little glimpses.
I will say just before you start, Chris, that we should give ourselves permission not to go as long on this segment as we usually do on the lead. Because I don't think we're going to have tons to say.
Perhaps not.
Okay.
All
sorry.
Right, Chris, proceed.
Yeah, well, I realized like why it was boring, and it's because they're writing this kid as a petulant teenager. Like superheroes are kind of dull to me anyway because they're so morally shallow. Mm-hmm. Everything's right and wrong. And then you add to that, I think I wrote about this, the fact that they're playing him like a 16-year-old self-righteous teenager. And that's just really, really boring. Mm-hmm. Mainly because I deal with petulant teenagers all day long anyway. But yeah, there's just nothing to this character that has any depth, like a teenager. They're not interesting people.
Well, particularly since part of his story is he's supposed to have been in this monastery, like learning enlightenment and shit. He does not seem that enlightened to me.
No, there's one scene where he's describing his plan and Claire's like, it sucks. And he goes, it totally doesn't suck. And I'm like, you're 13, dude. What the fuck?
Also, listen to Claire. Claire's always right. Come on.
Always.
And can we why didn't he just agree that he's John Anderson or whatever the fuck so that he can get out of the mental hospital? Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't speak to your, like, fistiness that you would lie and be like, I agree. I'm John Anderson. I'm going to hide these drugs under my tongue so that I can get out with my non-shoes and go avenge whatever. Like, it's clear what is wanted from you in this situation. Zen hide from that 70s show, which I was asked to mention this on the podcast, so I'm going to. The most interesting part of watching Iron Fist for me is when my naked husband, who paused in the door of my office while waiting for the shower to warm up, wondered why that guy from that 70s show was a Marvel superhero. So, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of taking a shower, hey, Iron Fist, take a shower. That first episode would have been way easier for you. Being clean opens doors. That's my advice to you.
Yeah. When people are pushing shoes on you, take a hint and take them the first time they're offered or suggested rather than try and argue that, no, you're okay walking around barefoot in New York because, no, you're not. You have diseases now.
And also going back to like root problems of this show, boring man tries to regain giant corporation. A relatable story? Question mark.
With fight sequences that look like people just fell down in the middle of a rehearsal. Like,
yeah.
This was not good kung fu.
Those do get better. They do sort of hit their stride with the fight scenes, particularly episode 8, where they have the sort of homage to the Drunken Master films.
Okay. I'm still not watching it.
Me neither, but
almost tempting.
No, it's real simple to watch. Wherever they're fighting, like, stop fast forwarding, and wherever they're talking, fast forward. Mm-hmm. Less talky, more fighty.
Oh, so just like real kung fu then. Got it.
Yep. That's what I thought, is when I saw it on Daredevil, I said, ooh, that's really cool. And then I saw it on Iron Fist and said, ooh, I saw that in Daredevil.
Yeah. So in the comics, which is weird because in the comics, this guy is a little less petulant and a little more playboy-y. And, you know, maybe, you know, they're working towards that, but we'll probably never know because nobody's going to watch after this first season. But in the comic, he and Luke Cage team together to create a for-profit sort of hero. It's called Heroes for Hire. And they're just sort of like the neighborhood superheroes that bust heads for the benefit of, you know, people in the neighborhood, but also for money. And those are actually kind of fun. The only way I could think to save this is if that they sort of make either season 2 of Luke Cage or season 2 of this, that story, they got to do something because as the lead in to their big Avenger Babies series, it's
the Defenders. Yes. Yeah,
it's bad. You know,
well,
like it sort
I just
of kills.
See Jessica, I want the scene I want to see is Jessica Jones slapping Iron Fist around for being the petulant teenager that he is. Just knock it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole like corporate daddy issues guy and everything. It's just like, oh God.
Oh, the poor man's Brett Cullen.
Yeah.
Actually, Brett Cullen is the poor man's Brett Cullen. And he's not doing anything, I'm pretty sure. The last time I saw him doing anything, he was on some like haunted psychic show on the Clue channel.
Wow.
Like, just get actual Brett Cullen. I like a couple of the cast members, but like Jessica Stroop, girl, you got to read the scripts before you agree to do the project.
Yeah.
The following, and now this. Like, I really like her. She always elevates whatever material she's in, but whatever she's in is always shite.
So I want to, I think when we were doing Luke Cage and we got all the screeners done, which was the first half of the season, which turned out to be the good half of Luke Cage, I said that I think that was my favorite. I want to revise my Marvel on Netflix ranking. So number one, I'm going to now put Jessica Jones back in number one. Number two, Luke Cage. Yeah. Number three, Daredevil, which I hated. And obviously number four, Iron Fist, which somehow managed to be more boring than Daredevil.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I agree with that ranking.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we're all fisted out. All right, everybody, it's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara Ariano.
I will keep this brief.
AKA.
Yep.
from Another Life, Wing Chun.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Just briefly about Catfish this season. I've now seen the first four episodes. The fourth is going to air, if you're listening to this podcast the day it drops. It will air tonight. There's nothing the show could do to make me stop watching it. I'm ashamed to say, but it's true. But they are really, really running out of story. And the degree to which, if you really watch how little of the quote investigation unquote they're actually putting in the episodes anymore, it's getting shocking. Like, they're down to, they'll look up two things and then be like, well, we're at a dead end. I guess let's go back to the person and tell them the one thing that we found out. Like, it's really, they are just not trying anymore. However, I will say the thing that upsets me the most about the current season, season six, is that now when they do their checkup with the person that wrote into the show, ostensibly the client, when they check in with them at the end of the episode, now they send a camera crew to like get real B-roll of the person continuing to live their life. Like, it's not just them on Skype reporting on what they've been doing, which I can't tell if this is the show trying to legitimize the work, in the giantest air quotes you can imagine, that Max and Neve do on behalf of the seeker, like to make it seem like, oh, look at all of the positive things that have come out of this poor person who is basically dumb coming on this show. I can't decide what MTV is trying to, what message they're trying to deliver with Catfish anymore, because there was a time when I thought it was going to just pivot to being a straight up dating show, because I naively imagined that they were going to run out of dummies who couldn't tell that they were being flagrantly lied to.
Who's the dummy now?
Well, exactly. I can't dispute that, Dave. You're right. But anyway, from a semiotic perspective, the show is still interesting in that regard, because it's trying to do so many things at once, none of them well. But anyway, if you've checked out of the show, I will just let you know. Next week's episode, the one that will be airing on Wednesday, the 29th of March, looks to be a Neve-free episode. It's just Max and someone else. I assume this was at the time that Neve's baby was being born. So if you can't with Neve anymore, I get it. But you might want to just check out that one, because Neve-less. And for my plug, my coverage of Catfish on previously.tv, which, as I said, I can't stop watching it. I still love it on some like sick level. And if nothing else, there's lots of gifs and silliness. So check that out at previously.tv.
Chris, what do you got?
Well, I got Love. The second season dropped on Netflix a couple weeks back. And, I really wasn't all that interested in watching it. I watched the first season and I kind of liked it less than I think other people did. It was okay, but I really wasn't interested in season two. You know, Gus was less, you know, charming in his social awkwardness than he was just annoying. And Jillian Jacobs never really kind of got past just the, you know, train wreck that she was in season one. Although I'm happy to report that season two actually is a whole lot better. They sort of played up what was really good in season one, smoothed out the edges a little bit. You get a lot more of her roommate, Birdie, who I really, really love. Mm-hmm. Who just, every time she's on screen, just makes the scenes better and keeps doing really unexpected things. And they've got Gus's friends pared down from that big crew of TV show theme writing group thing they had going to like two guys who are really good. And it's just, it's kind of warmer. It's funnier. The characters are fleshed out a bit more. There's a couple really great episodes that I really loved. Episode four, which was the four of them tripping on shrooms, having a whole episode about tripping. And then a really nice one with just Mickey and Gus kind of spending a lazy Sunday together, kind of doing that stuff you do when you first kind of start dating somewhere. We just sort of go from thing to thing and try to figure out who each other are and what you like and what you don't like. So if you like the first season, you'll like this one more. If you were iffy on the first season and weren't sure about checking season two out, do it, because it's worth it.
All right, Sarah, what do you got?
Speaking of time travel, that's right, Sarah D. Bunting, I'm going back in time and watching a sitcom from the beginning. The sitcom is Happy Endings.
Yeah.
I am really loving it. It is all pretty much thanks to this very podcast and the various canon submissions that we've had. Every time we have a canon submission about the show, I'm like, I got to watch this whole show from the beginning. So now I'm doing it. But, and I am not a crackpot, and I was just bitching about this to Tara on IM last night. So Tara, take a break. I am not a crackpot, but networks should not air episodes out of the like shooting and writing order.
God, yeah.
Because I think people are too savvy now about how TV is made generally. Maybe because I'm Mr. TV critic over here, I am more aware, but I think generally that's pretty obvious. It was obvious to my husband, who we were watching it last night, and when he wasn't like literally making notes of all the times that Jane did something super anal that was exactly like me and laughing at me, he was like, but wait, didn't they already establish that blah, blah, blah? And why are they bringing up that she left him at the altar? And is this episode 10?
Yeah.
So I looked it up. It was episode 10. They did air them out of order. It wasn't a totally bad call because the episodes that they did air right up top are way stronger. But I just feel like then ditch those entirely because the current TV landscape, both viewing and in terms of knowing how the sausage is made, as it were, isn't indicative for trying to get away with that. Like, it's not 1985 and you can't, you know, you're not moving stuff around with the little Velcro things on the board and being like, well, you know, they'll never know. Let's get them into it this way. Like, just cut them.
We were watching news radio and season 4. There is part 1 of a 2-parter. And then there's like an episode in between that and part 2.
I think there's 2 episodes in between.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And it goes sort of like A, C, D, B.
Yeah.
And like there's literally like a plot line where like who's going to be the boss?
Yeah, it ends on a cliffhanger.
And a cliffhanger. And then the next episode you watch is like the resolution plus another episode.
Yeah.
Then another episode. And then you find out the person who's been the boss for the last 2 episodes was declared boss. It's like,
yeah,
my question is not only like, why did they do that in the first place, but why didn't they correct it when it goes to Netflix or Hulu or wherever it goes, where you can just reorder them? Is there like some sort of like air
date law? And apparently
on
the DVD of Happy Ending, they air in the writing order, but then on Hulu, they air in the airing order.
Stupid.
I mean, I don't really care. It's still a good show. I'm going to keep going. It got over some bumps and I'm sort of like a few episodes into season 2. I just finished the Halloween episode and just fucking Adam Pally dressed as the baby strapped onto
Daisy
Wilson and just like making the little arm gestures to go with whatever he's saying consistently. Like he never lets that drop. It's so good. It's Bizarro World. I'm enjoying a sitcom. I'm talking about it. I am not a crackpot.
Yeah.
My plug is also about how I'm not a crackpot. Tyra Banks decided that since America's Next Top Model was doing really well in its new iteration, she would come back, take it over, and ruin it again with her humorless self-satisfaction. I don't think that that's a good call for the show or for this viewer, and I wrote about that at previously.tv, and you can read my ranting about it therein.
We will link it in the show notes.
Hey, how about a movie tonight, huh?
Wow, what's that aftershave you're wearing?
You high karate aftershave is so powerful, it drives women right out of their minds. That's why we have to put instructions on self-defense in every package. High karate, the brisk splash-on aftershave that smooths and soothes and cools. High karate, aftershave, cologne, and gift sets. High karate, be careful how you use it.
So, 2 things here. One, who knew the 70s had their own version of Axe body spray?
I knew that.
Basically, I didn't. I have heard of high karate, which, by the way, I didn't realize it was high karate and not hello.
Yeah.
Or not low karate.
Right.
High karate.
Yeah. And they're all like that. There's a few I watched online, and they're all a guy sprays high karate on himself, and then he gets raped by a bunch of girls.
Sure.
Yeah, that was, it's, I just didn't know.
I'm thrown by their pronunciation of aftershave, like not aftershave, aftershave, yeah. Like two separate words.
For my plug, I just wanted to bring up the Derby thing again. Previously.tv/Derby. There are three, you programmed the segment prizes up for grabs. One for the highest donor, one for a runoff raffle, and then one for popular vote after that. It's all for the nonprofit Derby team here in Hawaii that I roll with. And I just thought I would read the submissions I've had so far. And these are what people will choose if they win. A canon case for the Angel finale. Co-writing a game time with me. Reporting on the Australian cartoon, The Adventures of Figaro Foe. Gordon Lightfoot reviews an episode of Animal Planet's My Cat from Hell.
Oh, boy.
Watch one episode from every show Detective Munch was on and rank them according to munchiness. Submit a Downton Abbey no-knack. Have Dracula review Call the Midwife. Discuss British comedies of the early 2000s, such as Mighty Boosh and Snuffbox, which I've never heard of. Pamela Ribbon, friend of the show, doesn't need a segment, just Dave points. So we're going to throw her 100 Dave points. And finally, have Gordon Lightfoot do the intro and the outro of an episode. Any money that you donate through that will make its way to the Derby team and will be doubled for another charity along the way. So lots of money involved. Thank you in advance. And with that, Quirrell-less. Please correct me.
Well, now I'm not confident, but I would say it querulous. Sarah?
I would have gone with careless.
Oh.
It's also misspelled in the doc.
Okay.
Everybody wins. Yay.
We'll check up on that before the end of the show. And the other exciting piece of business is that Kim Reed has recorded episode one, and it will debut soon, of Little House on the Podcast.
Woo!
We don't have an actual day yet, but...
Might be next week, yeah.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. It's Caroline with another canon submission. The last time I submitted, it was both an epic failure, as everybody voted against my episode of Psych, but also a tiny triumph, because you all had nice things to say. So at first, I thought of trying to submit another series that you find underwhelming, but that I really love, namely Supernatural. But then I thought I really would like at least one person to vote yay this time. So I checked the canon and I noticed that there was only one episode of The Golden Girls in the canon. So I'm submitting The Golden Girls, Season 4, Episode 19, Till Death Do We Volley. This episode focuses on Dorothy and her high school best friend Trudy. We learned that their friendship was based on competition. As Trudy's arrival is imminent, the girls get ready to welcome her, as we can hear in extract number one.
I'm so excited. I can't believe I'm going to see Trudy again after all these years.
Oh, I'm excited for you too, Dorothy. That's why I want everything perfect. I'm making Scandinavia's oldest and most traditional appetizer treat, cheese and crackers.
Cheese and crackers, Rose. Not eggs gefluffen? And Gunter Hoggins? Pigs and a Sven Gabluten?
No, but you sure know how to make a girl's mouth water.
As soon as Trudy shows up, the competition with Dorothy resumes, complete with dares and trash talk. I quote, "You miserable sack of cellulite." Unfortunately, during a particularly heated tennis match where Dorothy tells Trudy you are dead, Trudy does indeed drop dead of a heart attack. Back in the house, the girls are trying to cheer up Dorothy in a classic kitchen table scene. although there is no cheesecake given the somber occasion. This allows Blanche to delve into one of her memories of her southern upbringing, to Dorothy's dismay, as we can hear in extract number 2.
Why did it have to happen this way? I feel like a murderer.
Now, I will not hear any more of that nonsense. It was a freak occurrence on a tennis court, that is all.
She's right, Dorothy. You did nothing wrong. Technically, I mean, nothing that would hold up in a court of law.
But why Trudy? She was the most energetic, alive person I ever knew.
At the center, Dorothy, we teach acceptance. In life, there are some things that are inevitable, and you just have to accept them.
She is right, Dorothy. I know, because I've been there myself.
You killed your best friend too, Blanche?
Sorry, Dorothy. I remember I was a blossoming belle who had just won the Little Miss Magnolia pageant.
Blanche, before you start, realize I am very vulnerable now. And in no mood to hear a story about you and some Yahoo cracker with 4 first names pawing at each other under a magnolia tree.
Well, pardon me, Dorothy, but we can't all come from places as socially acceptable as Brooklyn.
I'm sorry, Blanche, I'm sorry. Just go on with the story. Just try to shy away from words like tarnation and catfish.
Fine. Anyway, I was about 8 years old when I first met Kathy Lee on the playground. We became fast friends, just as thick as Louisiana blackstrap molasses on a steak of Johnny Cakes as high as an elephant's knee.
On a riverboat floating down the Mississippi Delta. Finish the damn story, Blanche.
Anyway, it was at a southern seafood fry that I proudly dragged Kathy Lee over to meet my folks. Well, my mama took one look at Kathy Lee and forbade me ever to see her again.
Why?
Because her mother was not in the Daughters of the Confederacy. Oh, how my heart went out to little Kathy Lee, standing there while our servants snickered at her servants. But mama insisted I break off the friendship or I wouldn't get brand new riding boots for Christmas. So I did.
Blanche, why is this a story about acceptance?
Oh, because years later, to get back at me, Kathy Lee slept with my daddy. That was something I had to accept. Mama accepted it, too. Along with a brand new Cadillac Eldorado for her birthday. You know, my family had a few dollars, and I loved them dearly, but when you get right down to it, basically they were trash.
Alas, Blanche's story doesn't seem to help, and Dorothy still has to host a party for her former classmates where she's supposed to announce Trudy's death. But unable to cope, she retreats to her bedroom. That's when, surprise, Trudy shows up. Turns out the whole thing was a practical joke. Blanche, Sophia, and Rose convince Trudy that she went too far and needs to apologize. But then everyone is astonished to find Dorothy in bed with Trudy's husband. But wait, it turns out to be yet another prank, as Dorothy had guessed that Trudy's death was a hoax. As Trudy and her husband rejoin the party, we have another typical scene with the girls. Blanche, having jumped on the prank's bandwagon, fakes being offended by Dorothy's behavior, while Rose backs her up and leaves the room for real. This episode contains all the characteristics of the series we know and love. There is a surprisingly short but effective St. Olaf story about a bull castration club, a fart joke from Sophia, great insults, and terrible, terrible 80s outfit and hair. This is why I think it would behoove children of the 80s like yourselves to vote this episode in the canon. Thank you for your consideration.
Just before we start, I just want to say that I am sorely tempted from now on for all our podcasts to start referring to clips as extracts.
Yes.
That's excellent. I love that.
That's good. But Sarah should start us off as our Golden Girls super fan.
Oh, What a delightful presentation. Thank you. It is always wonderful to hear your melodious extracts from these shows. I agree. This one took a little while to get going, but they were definitely laying the groundwork for the eventual payoff in that Catskillsy way. The St. Olaf story that I thought was the most effective was Rose talking about their wall of kick me signs that they'd collected, some with the original Scotch tape. I will also add that Blanche's fashion is not that far off point for today's lady.
True.
The hair is a little much, but definitely a good accessorizer. She's rocking a jumpsuit occasionally. I'm with it. Dorothy, as usual, looks like an entire stack of carpet remnants became sentient and rampaged throughout Miami. But what are you going to do? Yeah, this is pretty classic Golden Girls. The only knock on this episode, I would say, is that the actress playing Trudy is terrible. But that is a great story from Blanche. I'm glad we got to hear that whole clip, including as socially acceptable as Brooklyn, which I love it. I love that there was a catfish reference in it for Tara.
Yep.
This was a delight to watch again, of course, as they almost always are until you get into the she marries Leslie Nielsen and it's Golden Palace time. So, yeah, this was good. There was a fart joke in it. Something for everyone. Chris, what did you think?
I liked it. I was the part I liked the best was it. I made Allison really jealous that I got to talk about this and she didn't, because she's a massively huge Golden Girls fan. And since moving to Florida, I have actually come to appreciate the depth of the show, you know, that I did not appreciate before being from Jersey. They get so much right about it. This is right in line with what I like about the Golden Girls and what makes the Golden Girls so good. Although, I always like a good Blanche romance episode, so I was kind of hoping would have been more in there in the selection. But other than that, you know, the great Upper Midwest jokes, food jokes are flying aplenty. So I'm pretty happy with it.
I really thought that Blanche's Kathy Lee story was going to end with the kicker that she turned into Kathy Lee Gifford, because I think she was already a famous person then. But the way it did end was, you know, was fine too. I thought this was a lot of fun to watch. I liked that it showed a different side of Dorothy's friendships. Obviously, there's a lot of snarking among the four ladies on the show. Otherwise, there would not be a show. But I like that they captured the frenemyship of Dorothy and Trudy, and that, you know, there was genuine pain and anger still about, like, the prom story, the first inkling that we get of the, you know, practical jokes that the two of them supposedly played on each other, although for most of it we only hear about the ones that Trudy played on Dorothy and not the other way around. So even though, you know, I didn't see the twist coming that Trudy was actually still alive, but once we know that she is, and of course when then you cut to the bedroom, you know where it's going, that they were faking it and stuff. But I thought they did a good job capturing both the pleasure that that Dorothy and Trudy get out of their fun with each other, as well as, like, the true undercurrent of animosity. that was well done, and so it was fun to watch. Thank you for presenting it, Dave.
The part where B. Arthur finishes Rue McClanahan's folksy Southern explanations of things just to get the conversation moving was so Sarah D. Bunting. But, like, really annoyed, but also, like, still engaged in what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and using it to turn the tables, I thought was I can see why Sarah enjoys the show so much. Did anybody else catch the three times that Bea Arthur is obviously reading off the cue cards in this episode?
No.
Where her eye line, like, totally shifts during her performance? Yeah. It was a little weird.
Hmm.
I thought this episode was okay. It doesn't really pick up until, I'm going to say, like, a third in, maybe even a bit longer. And the whole super prank stuff that is so sitcom pat, that kind of had a hard time getting into it because it seemed so, like vaudevillian almost, you know, and it just sort of like kind of took me out of it. So I think the other episode, and I forget what it was called that we did, I did genuinely enjoy it. But this one, I was sort of like, it's got some good stuff in it. That clip that we played, you know, and it was long because it was just like really good, was the highlight, I thought, of this episode. But the rest of it, I thought was good, but not canon great. So I'm going to go up with a marginal no. But let's get the rest of the votes. Let's go backwards. So Tara Ariano?
I vote yay. Why not?
Chris Huff?
Yay.
And Sarah D. Bunting?
Happy birthday to me. Yay.
All right. Well, that's good. So you won with a tough one, because when there's four people, even a 2-2 split means you don't get it in. And you got it in. So The Golden Girls, Season 4, Episode 19, Till Death Do We Volley. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time for Winner and a Loser of the Week, and Tara has our whole rundown.
I sure do. Winner is RuPaul, not only because he announced last week that he got married to his longtime partner, sort of on the sly. They did it more or less in secret, so he just announced it like kind of casually in an interview, which I think is a pretty cool move. In addition to that, Bad Robot is making a period dramedy series all about RuPaul's life. Yes, I am here for that.
Oh, can't wow. wait.
So that would be...
Who isn't, what, honestly?
What period?
I think the 70s.
Wow, that'd be awesome.
It's a fictionalized version of RuPaul's rise from club kid to drag queen, gay icon, and global star. So maybe the 80s, if it's yeah. like... his coming of age. Mm-hmm. So yay, that's awesome. And loser, Scientology, because A&E has renewed Leah Remini : Scientology Ooh. And the Aftermath yay. For a second season. Literally the only time that's ever happened, and I've been happy about it. that a network has gone back on its whole limited series promise. So I'm not sure when that will be back, but I am here for it.
Speaking about being here for it, you know what you're all here for? It's game time.
Oh!
Wait, you said, oh, like you're surprised, because game time's usually right after Winner and Loser of the Week, each week.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay. All right, everybody, this is the second game time of the season. Somebody named Allison Lowe Hoff. No yes. relation, I assume. Won the first game for value guests last week.
Yeah. The pressure. Pressure on you, Chris Huff.
If this trend continues, today we are playing TV Typos Part TW from Rob Hartman, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Rob writes, audience attention spans are shorter and shorter, so networks are shortening TV show titles too. Players must guess these TV shows that have been shortened by one letter. Example, these six 20-something pals hanging out in the coffee shop are just monsters. Answer, fiends.
Aha.
1 point per answer, no hints. Everybody understand?
Yes.
Pretty simple?
Yes.
Let's throw it to Piggy.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So our order is going to be Chris, Tara, Sarah. Are we ready to play TV Typos Part TW?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Here sure. we go. Chris. Murdoch okay. brews the Earl Grey while B.A. Baracus passes the cucumber sandwiches. What's that show? You're going to take an existing show, remove one letter to create the new show I just described.
Team.
No. You're removing one letter from an existing.
Tame. I don't know.
The answer is the A-T. The A-T. Oh, remove the M okay. and you get the show I described. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Snooki and the Situation shop for footwear.
Jersey Shoe.
All right, for Sarah. Shatner hops aboard a mastodon and heads for La Brea.
That has to be Tar Trek.
Correct.
Nice.
Chris Huff. It's just 22 minutes of Soleil Moon Frye vomiting. Anybody?
Pukey Brewster.
Pukey Brewster.
Pukey Brewster. Take the N out of Punky Brewster. You got Pukey Brewster. Tara.
Yeah.
She's a lady pig who loves disco music and the Carter administration. She's a lady pig who loves disco music and the Carter administration.
I assume it's something to do with sow, but I can't. I don't know.
That 70s sow.
Of course.
Dirty Bunting, they're cowboy robots and they're moist.
Ew. Wet world? Wow.
For Chris Huff, the crowd says, come on, Bob. Do it, Bob. Do it, Bob. Do it, Bob.
I got nothing.
Bob's Urgers.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Padma finds out which Cuban revolutionary is the best and puts him on a t-shirt.
Top Che.
Correct. Neve Schulman grooms himself with his tongue and poops in a box.
Cat-ish?
Nice. Chris Huff, Mrs. Garrett watches over Blair, Tootie, and Kellyanne Conway.
Ooh.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Mrs. Garrett watches over Blair,
yeah.
Tootie, and Kellyanne Conway.
Nope.
Anybody?
No idea.
The facts of lie.
Yeah. Of course.
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Stephen Collins is going to make you upchuck half a dozen times and then once more.
7th heave.
Oh. Steve Austin's mother is also bionic, and still he never calls.
Bionic Ma?
Well, wait, what did you say? No.
Bionic Ma. No.
$6 million Ma is what we were looking for.
Oh. Okay.
That would have been Jamie Summers' mother, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Sally Fields plays the 13th letter of the Greek alphabet who defies gravity.
Flying new?
Hey!
He's on the board!
Tari Ariano.
Yes.
Mr. Grossworth fetches coffee for T. Leone, but he prefers the term administrative assistant.
Adam Secretary. Oh, he'll be so honored.
All right, bring us into our first score break. Two-year-olds and clones of Mrs. Ariano. What could go wrong? Two-year-olds and clones of Mrs. Ariano. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Indeed. Two-year-olds and clones of Mrs. Ariano. Here's what's going wrong. This answer, I do not know it.
That is Toddlers and Taras. Score break, please.
Rob Harbin, you are demented. Chris has 1, Sarah has 3, I have 4. Very close game.
All right. So that means, Chris Huff, you are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone.
No! Yes!
He has not been on the show, I think, since we started this, so you should make sure he knows what it is.
The Grossworth Equalizer Challenge gives you the opportunity to win 2 points and get back into the game. In order to win those 2 points, you must answer 3 of the 6 questions I'm about to read to you from the mid-80s Trivial Pursuit TV card set. Are you ready?
Sure.
What series features a sleuth with the middle name Beatrice? What series features a sleuth with a middle name Beatrice? Mid-80s. Questions.
Nope.
Murder, She Wrote. What state does Jessica Fletcher live in?
Oh.
What state does Jessica Fletcher live in?
Oh, Maine. Maine.
Yeah.
Yay.
What soap opera once saw Delia Ryan hooking up with a gorilla named Prince Albert? Good Lord.
Wow. Days of Our Lives.
Ryan's Hope.
It's always Ryan's Hope.
What black entertainer has made a cameo appearance, has made cameo appearances on General Hospital, Love of Life, and One Life to Live? Black entertainers make cameos on those shows.
Morgan Freeman.
Sammy Davis Jr. Mm. All right, got to get these next two. How many sections are there on Wheel of Fortune's Wheel of Fortune?
Wow. 20.
Ooh, close. 24. What cartoon show title character takes his legal problems to Perry Mason Tree? Gotta be. Gotta know this.
Can you repeat that?
What cartoon show title character takes his legal problems to Perry Mason Tree? Come on, Fred Flintstone. All right, back to the game. Christoph, here is your proper question. Martha Plimpton is longing for her grapes to dry. Martha Plimpton is longing for her grapes to dry.
Family Tie?
Raisin Hope.
Raisin Hope. Number 17. It's the story of a lovely lady bringing up one loudmouth Brandon Walsh.
The Bray Bunch.
Nice.
Joshua Jackson discovers an alternative universe inhabited by Giancarlo Esposito.
Esposito, and it's Fring.
All right, for Chris Huff, Jim McKay and ABC bring you everything you need to know about polka dots.
A Wide World of Spots.
Correct.
Yes.
Tara Ariano, when a great white wants to have when a great white wants to have a healthy orange glow.
Shark Tan.
Shark Tan. Of course.
Sarah Bunting, James Spader wants to take you to his dorm room and show you the bitchin' fluorescent posters he got from Spencer's Gifts.
James Spader, the black lit?
Nice.
Wow.
Hugh Laurie tells you to put the lotion on your skin or else.
Hose.
Wow.
Zachary Levi gets told what a loser he is on men's rights forums.
Cuck!
Well, kids, I reckon it was like this. Before your Aunt Robin came along, your ma and I were in the Donner Party, and one thing led to another.
How I at your mother.
Back to Chris. Tony Shalhoub smokes up in Jamaica.
Mon?
Jim Caviezel plays an Argentinian dictator, and he's fascinating.
Perón of interest.
Sarah. Ted Danson sells his bar to an ageless pop diva and her crew of gypsies, tramps, and thieves.
Shares?
Back to Chris Huff. Scientist nerd pals study one of the mod wives, R.I.P.
Oh. Nope. Nope.
That's a tough one. Big Ang theory.
Oh,
Big
Ang.
Tara. Mm-hmm. Oscar and Felix misjudged their tolerance for heroin.
The OD couple.
Bring us into our second score break. Noah Wiley didn't correctly pack his gear when heading to Aspen. Correct.
I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
Falling Skies.
Oh, that show.
Falls.
Oh, was like the Liberian?
Yeah.
No. Me too.
All right. Chris has 4. Sarah has 7. I have 8.
All right. Chris, that means you're back in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. All right. You know the drill. Here we go. What actor announced in 1986, it's really nice to be thought of as the Texan?
Larry Hagman.
Nice.
Nice.
What soap daily announced itself as the story of Vanessa Dale and her courageous struggle for human dignity?
As the World Turns.
Love of Life. Never heard of it. What new macho cigarette brand was advertised on TV for the first time in 1955 during I Love Lucy?
Marlboro.
What other macho cigarette brands are there?
Cool.
What night of the week... Did you just say cool? What night of the week did Saturday Night Live air in the fall of 1977?
What?
What night of the week did Saturday Night Live air in the fall of 77?
Saturday?
Yes. Indeed.
The fuck?
All right,
you did it.
You got it, but let's do these last two questions. What sitcom newscaster insists that the capital of New York State is Albania?
Oh.
Sitcom
Les Grossman.
Ted Knight. Ah. What Happy Days character has a last name that rhymes with his first?
Ralph Malph.
Well done. All right. That
Good
puts
job.
Them 2 points up.
That's right. Now our scores are Chris has 6, Sarah has 7, I have 8. Closer
right.
than ever.
Good game. Chris, here's a chance to get another point. Keegan Michael teams up with a legendary Brazilian soccer player.
Keegan Pele.
Julie, your cruise director, encounters an amorous constrictor.
The love boa.
Jennifer Gardner plays poor Yurik. We knew her well.
What?
Jennifer What's Gardner her? Plays poor Yurik. Yurik? I always heard Yurik.
Poor Yurik.
Yurik. We yeah. knew her well.
We knew her well.
Jennifer Gardner plays poor Yurik. We knew her well.
I knew her well. Uh-huh. I just don't know how.
Alas.
Oh,
Jane Lynch hosts as starlets compete to see who's got the best stems. Hacha. It's Chris.
Damn it.
Is this me?
Yep.
Yes.
Jane Lynch okay. hosts as starlets compete to see who's got the best stems. Hacha.
Gee.
Sarah.
Hollywood Gam Time.
Hollywood Gam Night.
But yeah, yes.
Yes. God is speaking to me through other people, but all he talks about is Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
Jan of Arcadia.
A deadpan comedian runs a Vermont inn in just his fancy just purchased fedora.
New hat?
Yes.
New hat. Get out of here, Emma Roberts and Leah Michelle. 23 Skidoo.
Nope.
Anybody?
Scram Queens?
Scram Queens, yep. Fairy tale characters are given a silver-haired mentor who tells them to make it work.
Once upon a Tim.
Dominic West goes to a carnival for stammerers.
Dominic West.
Yeah. That's
goes to good. A carnival.
For stammerers.
For stammerers.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so mad. Yeah. Just tell me what it is.
Tara, do you know?
No, it's something with the affair, but I don't know what it is.
The affair.
Just fair with two Fs.
Oh, Hartman.
Hartman. Sicko.
It's artless.
Debbie Allen says, I got you. This is for Chris.
Says, I got you. Yeah.
Debbie
Ooh. No.
Got a guess? How many shows has Debbie Allen been in?
Nope.
Bam. I got you, fam. David Caruso investigates and emancipates Mariah Carey. Or Tara. CSI, maybe. Courtney Cox drinks wine, but oh my God, she literally weighs 2,000 pounds.
Cougar ton.
Bo and Luke pay the required union membership fees. Bo and Luke pay their required union membership fees. Membership fees from a union.
Yeah. Oh, dues of hazards.
The dues of hazard. Big Bird and Woody Woodpecker team up and cook meth. Tara.
Speaking bad.
Bring us into our third score break. Sarah D. Bunting, Atlanta interior decorators trade sassy quips while raising Damien the Antichrist.
Wow. Designing omen.
You are correct.
Well, still quite close. Chris has 8. Sarah has 10. I have 12.
All right. You know what that means, Chris?
Again.
Again. Grossworth Equalizer Challenge, question number 1. What did Rocky lose after Boris Badenov blasted him with a goof gas gun?
Bullwinkle.
His fur.
Oh.
What was Little House on the Prairie, Little House on the Podcast, debuting soon, called after Michael Landon decided he couldn't bear another season? Little House, A New Beginning. What daytime soap hired Dr. Franz Bauer as a medical consultant?
General Hospital.
What soaps Dr. Neil Bolak? Yeah, Bolak. Had 2 cerebral aneurysms, 1 inoperable and the other terminal.
Guiding Light.
Ryan's Hope. What TV ranch lost 50 head of cattle to screw worms in 1979? How many TV ranches are there?
Yeah, the Dallas Ranch.
Yeah. Whatever. We're going to need a name, though.
Oh. No.
I know this.
South Fork. No. Who killed Peter Campbell on soap?
Billy Crystal.
Chester Tate. All right, guys. Here's the last stretch.
Oh, boy.
Chris Huff, are Alan Thicke's cast iron skillets getting bigger?
Oh.
Are Alan Thicke's cast iron skillets getting bigger?
No. No,
growing pans.
Growing pans. Archie Bunker gets a new son-in-law, former Vice President Gore.
Al in the family.
Anna Faris and Allison Janney run a meditation center.
Om.
Amy Poehler plays Mrs. Noah, keeping all the animals entertained.
Parks and Recreation.
Agent Dale Cooper has 2 tiny green veggies that are exactly alike.
Twin peas.
Aw.
Dana Delaney tends her sprouting terracotta pets.
So funny, it's killing me. It's Chia Beach.
After a barbecue, Andrew Lincoln decides to stretch his legs strolling around the neighborhood in Bermuda shorts, black socks, and sandals.
Can you repeat it?
After a barbecue, Andrew Lincoln decides to stretch his legs strolling around the neighborhood in Bermuda shorts, black socks, and sandals.
Oh.
You don't know who Andrew Lincoln is.
No. I couldn't. There was too many.
The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
A hilarious sitcom starring Melissa McCarthy and Tina Turner's abusive ex.
Oh, Ike and Molly.
Yeah, that sounds pretty funny.
Oof.
Aaron Sorkin pens this drama about a marsupial pony express delivering messages across the outback.
Marsupial Pony Express.
Yeah. Aaron Sorkin pens this drama about a marsupial pony express delivering messages across the outback.
The news rue?
Oh my God.
Oh God.
Wow.
Correct. All right, here comes everybody's last question. So quickly, non-regulation score break, please, Star.
Okay, Chris has 9. Sarah has 13. I have 15.
All right. Chris Huff. A Netflix historical drama about an Italian merchant who travels the Silk Road looking for a nice place to drop a deuce.
Oh, God.
What's that show? A Netflix historical drama about an Italian merchant who travels the Silk Road looking for a nice place to drop a deuce.
Marco Poo.
Little Ricky Schroeder is into granny porn.
Silver Poons.
Oh, God. I'm scared.
Our last question. A film-obsessed teen goes nuts with the Axe body spray.
Thanks, Picky. I believe this is Dawson's Reek.
Correct. All right. So I think Tara got that, right?
Yes.
All right.
So.
Shits and giggles.
Yep.
Here's our tiebreaker. First person to answer this gets a steel meal.
Mm.
All right.
Yep.
Did visitors from space impose property fines on the pyramids?
Ancient liens.
Ancient liens is correct.
Ooh.
Hartman, you magnificent bastard.
Tara. Tara. God, that was so good.
Rob Hartman. My God.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We hacked and chopped our way through Netflix's latest hero series, Iron Fist, before going around the dial with stops at Catfish. Love, happy endings, and high karate. Hi, karate. Caroline served us a cannon of an entry for Golden Girls Practical Joke episode, and it was an ace.
Uh-huh.
I just changed it up there because it was tennis.
Nice.
We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was a winner of this week's TV Typo Game Tim. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Silver Poons,
Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, you heard that.
And Chris Huff.
I got no idea what you're talking.
We broke his gentle spirit. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crap.
Querulous. This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.